The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on May 25th, 1995 at New Panihati Dham in Atlanta, Georgia. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 6, Verse 31.
Kshatriyas also came into existence. By following the Kshatriya principle of protecting society from the disturbance of thieves and miscreants. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As the Brahmanas are recognized by their particular qualification of inclination toward the transcendental knowledge of Vedic wisdom, so also the Kshatriyas are recognized by the power to protect society from the disturbing elements of thieves and miscreants. The word anuvrata is significant. A person who follows the Kshatriya principles by protecting society from thieves and miscreants is called a Kshatriya. Not the one who is simply born a Kshatriya. The conception of the caste system is always based on quality and not on the qualification of birth. Birth is an extraneous consideration. It is not the main feature of the orders and divisions. In Bhagavad Gita 18, chapter 41st to 44th verse, the qualifications of the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras are specifically mentioned, and it is understood that all such qualifications are needed before one can be designated as belonging to a particular group. Lord Vishnu is always mentioned as the Purusha in all Vedic scriptures. Sometimes the living entities are also mentioned as Purusha, although they are essentially Purusha Sakti, Para Sakti or Para Prakriti, the superior energy of the Purusha. Illusion by the external potency of the Purusha, the Lord, the living entities falsely think of themselves as the Purusha, although they actually have no qualifications. The Lord has the power to protect. Of the three deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, the first has the power to create, the second has the power to protect, and the third has the power to destroy. The word Purusha is significant in this verse because the Kshatriyas are expected to represent the Purusha Lord in giving protection to the Prajas, or all those who are born in the land and water. Protection is therefore meant for both man and the animals. In modern society, the Prajas are not protected from the hands of thieves and miscreants. The modern democratic state, which has no Kshatriyas, is a government of the Vaishyas and Sudras, and not of Brahmanas and Kshatriyas as formerly. Maharaj Yudhishthira and his grandson, Maharaj Parikshit, were typical Kshatriya kings, for they gave protection to all men and animals. When the personification of Kali attempted to kill a cow, Maharaja Parikshit at once prepared himself to kill the miscreant, and the personification of Kali was banished from his kingdom. That is the sign of Purusha, or the representative of Lord Vishnu. According to Vedic civilization, a qualified Kshatriya monarch is given the respect of the Lord because he represents the Lord by giving protection to the Prajas. Modern elected presidents cannot even give protection from theft cases. And therefore, one has to take protection from an insurance company. The problems of modern human society are due to the lack of qualified brahmanas and kshatriyas and the over-influence of the vaishyas and sudras by so-called general franchise. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation and purport to the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 6th chapter, 31st text. In the matter of creation of the universal form. Om Tat Sat. So not only do we have to pay taxes in the modern society, but we also have to pay insurance companies. Previously, if you pay tax, it was enough. Because the kshatriyas, the government was effective enough, that by having an effective government, they would keep the thieves under control. They would keep the natural balances in harmony simply by engaging all the people in God-conscious activities. So now, not only do we have to pay taxes, we have to also pay our insurance because we can't depend upon the government to protect us. We can't protect upon the society to be that karma-free that people won't suffer calamities. There's a Prabhupada refers to in the Krishna book a famous Indian astrologer called Konar. She has a book, Konar Vachan, where she gives different omens. And in the book she says that if it rains in the month of Magh, it means that the king is very pious. And it said if it rains in some other particular months which are not good for the, it means that the king is impious. Sometimes if you get rain, it ruins your crops. Sometimes if you get rain, it's very good for the agriculture. So all these things would be so synchronized that they could calculate whether the king or the government was any good by how it was raining. Nowadays, of course, even in North America, it's not uncommon to have massive floods, have tornadoes, hurricanes. And, of course, nobody thinks it was the government's fault. This is just life. Right? But actually, if a country is so pious and God-conscious, then such calamities would not occur. And a government in the Vedic context is not responsible simply for the mundane management, but also to see that the people were engaged in God-conscious activities. There was a separation of church and state in that the church was above the state. Unless a church was deviating, unless a brahmana was deviating from his duties, then they wouldn't punish. I mean, then they would protect the brahmana. If he was deviating, then only the kshatriya could take some step. There was an obvious deviation from religious principle. Prabhupada refers sometimes, he said that even in some of the humorous stories of India, you can get an insight into the culture of India. That at that time, the religion and the culture was inseparable from the rest of all the other activities. For instance, there's one story, a Gopal Par story, sometime Prabhupada would, in a more later moment, tell some of these stories. It seems to fit in right now though, so I'll take a liberty. The one time that King Krishnachandra was going along with his courtier, his advisor, Gopal. I guess later in medieval times in Europe, they had the court jester who would just be kind of a clown. I don't really know what the court jester did, but in the Vedic time, they had one person in the court of the king who was allowed to spoof on the king, but he was traditionally very intelligent. Prabhupada gave an example about Gopal one time, the king could also spoof on him. Everyone else he had to treat very seriously, because if he made fun of one of his, you know, prime ministers or something, and everyone laughed at him, it would interfere with the prime minister's ability to do his job. So he had one person where the king could break the normal gravity, because some had to deal with so many heavy things. Because at that time, the king was the Justice Department and executive both, and the legislature, all in one. But legislature, he also had advisors, and he would take their advice, and then he would give the final edict. So, Prabhupada gave the example one time, you know, that one example, just to get understand who the personalities are, was that Gopal came in the court of the king, and the king said that you're an ass. And then Gopal said, no, there's a difference between me and an ass. And the king said, no, there's no difference, you're an ass. What is the difference? Then finally went on back and forth and said, well, what's the difference between you and an ass? And then Gopal measured off the distance between himself and the king and said, 5 feet. So, anyway, that's just, now we know who the personalities are. Now, Krishna Chandra, he's going along. It's a very serious situation this time. He sees a brahmana wearing a shaligram shila around his neck on the side of the road passing nature's cold. And he's very upset. He said, what is this? The brahmana is passing and he's wearing a shaligram. Why doesn't he hang a shaligram on a tree branch or something and go take a shower? So he has this brahmana arrested. He said, because of brahmanas like you, our whole kingdom's karma is being affected. You're committing offenses to the shaligram shila. I'm going to have you beheaded at sunset. And then the brahmana was very repentive and begging for mercy and everything. But the king said, no, if brahmanas like you are in the kingdom committing offenses to shaligram, all the citizens are going to suffer. Everyone. Well, Gopal, he thought, well, this, some clemency could be considered in this case, since the brahmana was very considerate. And then, anyway, he got an idea. So then he was saying, well, Maharaj, but he's only the carrier. And he said, look, this is not funny business. We're dealing with the karma of the whole kingdom. Don't joke around now. So, no, I'm not joking. I'm being very serious. He's only the carrier. So listen, Gopal, I don't want to joke around. This is very serious. I'm sick. He's only the carrier. Can't you understand? What do you mean? He's only the carrier. My Lord, when you're riding on your horse, and your horse passes, do you consider yourself impure? Do you have to go and take a shower or something? Does your horse pass? No. He's only the carrier. All right, this time we're letting you go. The king said to the brahmin, but in the future, you know, you must be more careful. So Gopal, he also brought things down into a... But it showed how even 300 years ago, this Gopal Krishna Chandra was during the time of the Mughal rule in India, sometime after Lord Chaitanya and sometime before the British. So even at that time, the kings were seeing, okay, if a brahmana does something really crazy, then they could step in. Although ordinarily, of course, they would worship the brahmanas and receive them with all respect. They did have only a power when they were deviating. Prabhupada mentioned once that the government should see if someone in the name of Christianity is going completely against Christianity, or in the name of Islam, they're doing something completely off, or in the name of Hindu or Vedic Dharma, they're doing something which is totally against the Vedic Shastra, then the government should step in. You know, like giving. But now the people in the name of religion, they do so much irreligion, and there's nobody to check it. But before, that was one of the duties of the kings, to check irreligion in this kingdom. Just like Parikshit Maharaj, he checked Kali from killing or beating and persecuting a cow and a bull. So now the government, you know, they have, first of all, they don't know what is religion, what's your religion. And then they don't make any attempt to check anything. So gradually they create their own morality, and then they reevaluate things and they change it again and again this way. We're seen to be on an upswing, however, that people are tending more morally conscious in North America. The problem is that the college, I saw recently a Gallup poll, the college educated people who live in the big cities or more educated, they seem to have a higher moral consciousness growing. But those who are traditionally less educated, they're totally against it. So in the future, you may have a situation where you have a kind of a, it's already seemed to be happening with these militias who are traditionally resentful now of the government. Some of the government, like, why no smoking? Why all the restrictions? Some of the restrictions are actually good. Some of them may be repressive. The educated people can appreciate that if you have no smoking, that's saving people from getting cancer just by being near someone who's smoking. But the uneducated people, they think that this is a restriction of their rights, and they're not considerate about others' rights. So there's a problem. Unless the whole population is educated, then simply the government makes edicts that don't work. Sometimes you just like make a law. Everyone has to chant Hare Krishna. Or even in a family, the parent may think, okay, we're going to force everyone to chant. But then what happened? There may be some resentment if the people are not properly educated in why they should chant and somehow enlivened to want to do it. There's another example given by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur about what another king, Hindu king, some hundreds of years ago, or I don't know how many, some time ago, his name was Bhagawan Singh. And he gave an order that everyone in my kingdom has to chant Hare Krishna Sankirtan every day in the evening, otherwise they'll be arrested. It's a very good face value. It's a very good instruction, getting everyone to chant. But instead of doing it by, you know, sending out brahmanas and preaching to the people and convincing everyone, having big festivals or something, he tried to do it by an administrative edict. You have to do it. So one day he went out and incognito, mixed amongst the people to see, well, what's the reaction, how people are chanting or not. Then he came across one group of people and someone said, hey, look, it's getting to be time for us to do our chanting, you know. Then one person said, yeah, this is Bhagawan Singh's trip. It's his thing. Everybody has to do this. You know, what's the use of all this? Waste of time. He was shocked. You know, here he's given an order which is meant for the well-being and upliftment of all the people. And here you get some ignorant person who's just saying, well, it's his trip. It's his thing. You know, why should I have to do it? So, there was a certain gap between his understanding and the understanding of the people. The same gap we're seeing, you know, today in the modern America. The educated people, they may understand, but the general public, how are they going to be educated? How are they going to understand? And that comes in the principles of religion. Brahmanas are important. They're essential to go and educate the society about religious principles. And they should be supported and protected. And rather, in all respects, they should be nourished by the kshatriyas. Because kshatriyas can't do their job of protecting society if everybody's bad. A few people are thieves and it works. If everybody's a thief and a rogue and a rascal, then try to manage that society. The first, just, I mean, in fact, you see, like, years ago, I remember when there was a blackout in New York City. Wasn't it like a 16-hour blackout or something? And the whole city went wild. Everybody started looting, robbing, raping. Now, as soon as they thought, okay, there's no light, the police can't see us, they went wild. I mean, what is the nature of so many people there? I mean, Calcutta, you have blackout every day. But people don't, you know, they don't go looting the shops or anything. In India, it's quite regular to have electrical failure. And, you know, I mean, you have your share of thieves, but it's like, you know, it's not that because electricity goes out, all of a sudden everybody starts breaking down the shop. So, we have a problem if the basic tendency of the people is to be criminal. A strong government, heavy police, and I can only control the situation up to a certain point. Then when you reach a breaking point because of one reason or another, then you get riots, you get a mass kind of disturbance. So the government should understand that it's essential to have spiritual education spread throughout society, and that should be proper spiritual education. So the Krishna Consciousness Movement, Prabhupada brought it here to the West to give the whole world the principles, the underlying fundamental principles of God consciousness, and to give them a process whereby you can advance to the highest perfection. And Prabhupada was very broad, was, you know, most broad-minded, and it wasn't that the bottom line was even had to join the Krishna Conscious Movement. I think that one brother came here from the Roman Catholic Church, Chaitanya Das, he was raising this point also. And it's true that Srila Prabhupada, when he would find someone who was not particularly ready to take up Krishna consciousness, would just encourage them in their own religion. Sometimes he would tell Sikhs, you know, be a good Sikh, or tell Christians, you know, believe in God. I'm sure that Hari Suri could well remember a few examples of this. What time do we have in class, but it's already there. What's the real time? And even, I mean, my mother went to see him to tell my father, I mean, tell my spiritual father, my material former ashram mother went to speak to my spiritual father, Prabhupada, and convince him that I should go back to whatever, her life. But then, Prabhupada completely disarmed her by saying, we have no objection to you worshipping Jesus Christ. We don't want to convert you. Rather, if you understand these principles, you can be a better Christian. You can be a better practitioner of your religion. And we'll be very happy if you can utilize any of these principles. And because of presenting the whole philosophy in such a way, you're totally disarmed. And in fact, she started chanting Hare Krishna, and still does, although she regularly goes to her church. And she says, Prabhupada encouraged me to be a good Christian. So she believes in Jesus Christ, but she chants Hare Krishna and reads the Bhagavad Gita. And you may get, you know, millions of people like this in the future. And certainly the world's going to be better for it. Of course, she gave up most eating of meat and other things like that. So it becomes a very great influence on society. So Prabhupada, he had the broad view. And one day I got a dream or a vision or something, how Srila Prabhupada was not really only coming, I mean, just for the bringing Krishna consciousness to some few, but actually he was coming to deliver the entire world. And to bring the entire world, you know, the well-wisher of everyone, to bring all of them up to a higher level. It's like Prabhupada, I want to change the way that people think. He really brought in a worldwide revolution of Krishna consciousness. And that is, of course, directly to save, bring people under the direct shelter of pure devotional service. But even to uplift people from all different religious backgrounds to a higher level in their own traditions. Which is gradually, you find that when they do that, then gradually people do start to become favorable to Krishna consciousness and they start to take up the principles. Whether they could go all the way in this life or not, the Prabhupada, he was bringing them closer and closer to Krishna as much as he could, depending on that particular person. And he wanted, Srila Prabhupada stressed that he wanted a Krishna conscious society, ISKCON society, to be producing principally brahmanas. I think he said in a group that one out of every six could be a kshatriya for protecting the temple. But he wanted to have brahmanas who are working for the upliftment of society. He felt that was the big need. Of course, we may have produced many Vaishnavas who are acting in other roles, but there's certainly the need that people act also in a brahminical role. In an emergency, it says a brahmana can take some other employment. What is a brahmana trying to do is protect the society spiritually by educating the whole society in the principles of religion, in the principles of God consciousness, in the methods of God consciousness. And that is what the society needs. Because if the brahmanas are protected by the kshatriyas, then everything works very nicely. If they're persecuted by the kshatriyas, then it's a big difficulty. When you travel around Gaurmandal Bhumi, there seems to be a dark period in between the Mughal rule and the British, when the kings started to become weak. And they couldn't protect the brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. I think this is why the British could have an easy time to take over India, because there are many weak kings at that time, thousands of princely states. The Mughals, due to their, they lost their own potency as time went on. So what happened was, in some generations after, this is maybe 10 generations after Srinivas Acharya, it was just like maybe just before the British came, there was a marauding bandit king called Bhaskar Pandit. Bhaskar Bandit. Somehow he was called Pandit. But really this Bhaskar Rao, he came from some part of Maharashtra, Andhra side Maharashtra, captured certain parts of Bengal from the existing kings. But he wasn't a Kshatriya. Maybe by birth he was a Brahmin, I don't know what he was by birth. But certainly whether he was a Kshatriya or what he was by birth, but by practice he wasn't a Kshatriya because he didn't protect. Rather, the first thing he did was loot the Brahmins. He was more like a demoniac kind of person. He'd go in and raid the Brahmanas, loot their money. He was against Brahminical culture. He's against Vaishnavas. So you go to the birth, the place of the ashram of Srinivas Acharya, and all around there, there used to be a whole big village here of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. But when this Bhaskar Pandit raided, they all left from here and went to a kingdom where there was a strong king who could protect them. So you could see that as we went around Gaurmandal Bhumi, you see many places here there was also a big Vaishnava, but this Bhaskar Bandit, he kept coming in. So we went to Vishnupur, where was the actual ashram of Srinivas Acharya, where he converted initiated the king, Virambir Vikram Shah Dev, and made him a Vaishnava. And there are 13 different temples of the 13 different generations of kings that were following in the line. And each king made another temple. It was like tradition. They always made a very beautiful temple. So now the archaeological survey of India, which is protecting the archaeological relics, they have notified that these are all public domain and these have to be protected. So they spent tens of millions of rupees in refurbishing the exterior of the temples and lighting the temples. They went there inside, there's no light on the deity. He said, no, they won't give us even one light bulb inside. He said, this is not archaeological. This is the deities. So he told us, the deity, no light. The pujari said, look it, I got no clothes for the deities. And then it's like a total inside. The puja is at the end because it's under the king. There's no more kingdom. He has no money. He's taken all the Radharanis and kept in his house. He's afraid that people will steal the Radharanis because they have gold in them. And you just see all the 13 Krishnas lined up in one temple with a big Gaur Nithai personally installed by Srinivasacharya. Beautiful deity. Very strong Gauranga Nityananda. It's heartbreaking, you know. We all gave some donation to the pujari, for the deities, hoping it. And recently the government, apparently, they've been sending a message that if we want to take out some of those temples, maybe they would consider it. But anyway, you could get an idea. I mean, in the future, I think ISKCON has to think about all these things. Mayapur doesn't have the capacity. In the future, it's like an international project to protect our ancient acharyas. Historical heritage that they've left for us. But one of the interesting things that happened is in going and seeing all the historical things, they showed us an interesting relic. That here is the cannon, and all the people are going and bowing down to the cannon. So why is people worshipping a cannon? I mean, in America, they worship Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck, right? That's all right. Maybe a cannon, you know. Couldn't figure out why they want to worship a cannon in India. So, there was a reason. It turned out that the 10th or 11th generation from Srinivasacharya's presence, the Vikram Virambir Maharaj, the king who was president at that time, he was a very great Vaishnava. And he was also a strong king. But he was attacked 13 times by this Bhaskar Pandit. And every time he had repulsed him and protected the kingdom. But this time, Bhaskar Pandit had amassed 10,000 mercenaries. And he was making a massive campaign against the... You heard this story before? Massive campaign against the kingdom. I don't know why, but the king said, oh, before we're going to attack this time, for one day, I want the whole country to do non-stop Harinam Sankirtan. No matter what, no firing of arms, we're just going to chant. But this Bhaskar Pandit, when he heard that this was the order, he thought, I'm going to move up my campaign today, attack them in the midnight while they're all chanting. They're not even going to defend themselves. It'll be easy to walk over them. So in the middle of the night, the king hears a pom, 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 cannon firing. And he said, what is that? You know, what's going on? I told nobody should fire any arms. Then he sent, you know, a messenger, what's going on? And then the messenger came back and said that Bhaskar Pandit, his whole army is totally massacred. There's nobody left. Everyone's dead. Who was firing? I don't know. He didn't find anyone there. The smoking cannons were there. The smoking gun. So they went out. And then there was like an old man there, you know, sitting on the side somewhere. And he said, you know, how did this happen? He saw the complete army of Bhaskar Pandit had been cannoned to smithereens. And you know, and it takes, these were like muzzle loading cannons, you know, like, you know, it wasn't, you know, but the cannons are going off, sounded like a machine gun. It was like, what's just going off? So they couldn't figure out, you know, they thought there were like 50 cannons, but there's just two cannons there. And the other man said, well, I saw the deity come out in a massive form holding one cannon under each arm, and the cannons were just going off. And the deity totally destroyed everyone while you were all chanting. And then they went to the temple, you know, and pujari went inside the temple room, and then the temple room was filled with gunpowder smell. So then, you know, they had a huge festival, and did a big abhishek of the deity next day, and everything. And recently the archaeologists have found these coins. In a particular place with the battlefield, they found the coins from Maharashtra with the symbol of the Bhaskar Pandit on it, showing that it was there. That's where it ended. So, this is a very special deity. But the deity personally came out and protected the whole kingdom. Normally the Kshatriyas are supposed to do that. So, of course, Vishnu, he's the supreme protector. So he protected, I think he was so angry at the offenses that Bhaskara Rao had done against so many Vaishnavas that he wanted to personally take care of them when he was going to attack his defenseless devotees. Of course, the king shouldn't really put the devotees in that situation. But anyway, how to analyze all these things now. So, we have, that's why people go and they still, because this is a canon that was worshipped, it was held by the deity. One of the canons is taken away, someone is still there. The canon that blew up, this marauding bandit prince, who has been persecuting especially Vaishnavas and Brahmanas. So there's a difference between a Kshatriya and a non-Kshatriya. Kshatriya is a protector. Those who simply exploit the people or take from them, they're not Kshatriyas. They may be rulers, but they're not real rulers in the Vedic sense. And because the king had to take, there's a Vedic verse that says the king has to take karma from it, from the people. And I mentioned this last time, and the guru has to take from the disciple, parents from the children, and the king, because he was also taking their karma, he was concerned that everybody be doing good karma. There's a direct interest, or the husband has to take from the wife. The husband's there, they're concerned that the children, that the wife should be engaged, the parents, that the children are engaged in spiritual activities. Because you're implicated. There's a unity there. You know, when people get married, there's a oneness, the karmas must emerge. And so there is a mutual responsibility. Or that's a traditionally, of course, the wife was considered a dependent. And the husband, therefore, was responsible for her karma, but she wasn't responsible for the husband's karma. I don't know now, under the equality, what happens with the karma? I don't know if the wife can say, well, I'm not responsible. She's not dependent anymore. But anyway, that's something to really have a seminar with Yamaraj about. Figure out. But before, the wife was insulated from the husband going out and doing some bad karma in his work, and she was insulated, so she could always remain very pious. Anyway, Kali Yuga, now everything is very complicated. And people are not protecting. There's another problem. Of course, the husband was supposed to protect. Now they don't protect. It's a big problem. Husband, if they beat their wife, it's very bad. Where's the question of pati, a protector? If the king persecutes the people, or is tyrannical over his subjects, then where's the question of protection? So therefore there was the overthrowing of tyrannical kings. But if everything works properly, if you have a husband that's protecting, parents who protect the children, don't abuse them, you have teachers that educate the children, you have brahmanas are giving the proper religious principles to society at large, and if you have, you know, kshatriyas are really protecting society and taking strong action, definitive action against the disrupting elements in the society, then what happens is you have an orderly society where people can practice God consciousness. So all these systems were put into place and were working in the previous yugas. The deficiencies are mentioned in Shastra when Krishna had to personally come in through one of his avatars or one of his demigods, assistants, to straighten out things. But the basic system was kept in place. Now we're seeing what happens when there's no system in Kali Yuga, and it gets worse later on. Now this is the time to spread Krishna consciousness, and through the influence of God consciousness, things can be naturally brought into a proper harmony. People are God conscious and everything starts to work. There's a transcendental feature of spreading Krishna consciousness, that things start to come into place. So, you're this, all of the devotees have the special messenger, special empowered secret service of confidential service of Lord Chaitanya. To see that this mercy of the Lord is spread, and the benefit will be spread to everyone. So I had heard that because here the public in Alachua and Gainesville area, they'd get some opportunity to associate with the devotees through the different sporting events of the children and through Boy Scouts and through open house and through so many different ways that gradually they start to appreciate the Hare Krishna devotees. That, oh, they're very nice and you want to advance spiritually. I heard that some parents said if I had the money, I'd put my child in the Gurukul. Even though it's just a member, not a devotee of ISKCON, but a member of the public, they appreciate it, the children and the society here. So it's a great opportunity with so many devotees that if the devotees act in an upright manner, don't do things which are black marks on the whole community, if they act in an exemplary manner, it can have a wide impact. So far, I've heard that it is having an impact. It's very enlightening. So that kind of grassroots preaching is what Kali Yuga is suited for. Kalo Sangho Shakti, we get forced by a mass assembly of people. So I thank you very much for having your influence on society in this way, and hope that it goes on by your continued efforts and improved efforts. You can expand more and more, because that's what's missing in society. There's no shortage of Vaishyas and Sutras in America, but there's a shortage of Brahmanas, and there's a shortage of Kshatriya, people to spiritually guide and protect the society. When people are more Krishna conscious, hopefully they'll start to try to select people who are Kshatriyas for their government. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Name of that deity is Madan Mohan. Your deity is still being worshipped. There's many other pastimes of that deity also.
That deity part of the, I mean, when
the... That deity was the personal deity of Vyambar Maharaj, the original deity, worshipped by Srinivasa Charya. Is that what your question was going
to be? Well, the question was going to be the government sounding us out about taking over the management.
That's the one temple that's still being fully worshipped. The other personal deities of Gauranitai of Srinivasacharya, and other, his personal deity, which is a smaller deity, Radha Kala Chan, I think also, and 12 other deities, those deities are not being so well worshipped. This is the deity of the original king. This is the Ashtadhatu deity, about 3-4 feet high.
I have a question. A comment first is that we also had a rule after the king of Vaishnava, everyone was king of Vaishnava, chant Hare Krishna. We used to go around and say, you're not chanting, please chant, you don't want to chant, please. My question is this. You were explaining how the duty of the Kshatriya, to see that the different Brahmanas are acting according to their Brahmic dharma. And they have the ability that if a Brahmin is acting adharmically, they can administer some punishment. So my question is, the intricacies of dharma are very difficult to understand. And Brahmins, they study Shastras. So Kshatriya studied in the group of Shastra, but they're involved in a lot of, graduate and a lot of diplomatic activity. How is it that they can, apply the dharmic principles in such a way to actually have authority over the Brahmins who are studying the Brahmins all the time?
That's why they would have their Rajguru. Normally the king would be guided by the Rajguru and by the assembly of Brahmana counselors before taking action against a particular Brahmana. I think that in this case, because the king was shooting from the hip, there was no one else there, he just started acting. So I think that basically what Gopal was just doing, not really giving any high guidance as a Brahmana, but just saying there may be other ways of looking at it. You may not be right in taking such a drastic action against this Brahmana. Because, the king was just applying, or he's got the shaligram. Maybe having a shaligram around the neck wasn't an offense, it was. Then whatever got into that final thing, what was it? Because that's something that should be decided by a by brahmanas based on shastra and everything. The king here, he wanted to do the right thing, but he didn't have his counselors present. All he had was Gopal. They were on a horse ride. And he was already giving capital punishment to the brahmanas, so that Gopal was kind of just bringing a little bit of caution that there may be other ways of looking at it. Like, you know, and therefore he said, hold off. So that's a good point, that actually the kings, they were not, when you study the, I'm sure we're going to get in the Mahabharata, the teachings of Bhishma about a king and to Yudhisthira, and you'll find that a king was really not just a lord, but he was like a whole institution. He had Brahminical council, he had a Kshatriya council, he had a Vaishya, kind of a general Vaishya council, which also had some sudras in it that would talk about the economy of the whole nation. Then he had his ministers, and they had a ministerial council, and then the prime minister, and then he had the Rajguru, and the Rajguru was an important feature of that the Rajguru had his representative in every council of the king. And he would, this was just sitting there, watching, and then if they wanted counsel, he would put in. But he would report to the Rajguru what's going on in every single council. That means like in the Senate, in the Supreme Court, in all the places, you know, the Rajguru would have his representative there. And the Rajguru saw something wasn't going right, wasn't going according to Shastra. And the representative might say, well, you know, this is not according to Shastras and the people didn't listen. He'd tell the Rajguru. The Rajguru would personally communicate with those people. If it didn't work out, you know, he didn't have any direct managerial authority. Just, if it didn't work out, he'd go to the king, call the king in and say, look, this thing is going wrong. And the king had the power. He was the administrative head. He was the one who had to implement. He was the implementer. But the Rajguru was the one who was seeing that everything was fine, right? So it was a very major position. What happened, of course, Rajgurus became like kept people for some of these kings, and they didn't have that independence, but originally they had the total independence. Yeah.
Just a small point. Is it Gopal or Gopal Dhar?
It's a par with it's called Chandra Bindu. It's a nasal N. Par. Yeah, I mean in Bengali right there by a little half moon with a dot over it. I don't know what it's like it's like a kind of a nasal N. It's not a hard N, it's a par. Par. Like bar, but the N with a squiggle over it. Some of those. Yes.
When you're reading the purport, Maharaj, he was describing how in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, the qualities of the different varnas are given. Qualities of the kshatriyas are given, qualities of the brahmins are given. But all that's given for the vajras and sutras are their work, what their occupation is. So how is it? I mean, somebody wants to work in that way. But you can't work as a Brahmin unless Samadana Taposo Chama. You can't work as a Kshatriya unless, you know, Sayam, Drifti, Teja, Daksha, all those are there. But Vaishya and Sutra, there's no such qualitative characteristics, just work.
Kshatriya, if you can do those things, Vaishya, if you can do Krishi, Goraksha, Vanijya, Vani, if you can do those activities, whatever the industriousness and the creativity or whatever, to actually pull those things off requires a certain amount of practical intelligence. It's not easy to maintain a business. I know some devotees who are in an executive position, they preferred sometime to just take a job and they could practice. Then they found that difficult. Then there's a problem when you take a job is that you have to do whatever your boss is saying. But, of course, some of the union jobs, it's pretty simple just to what you do. But anyway, you require either the skill to do the practical work, which is the sutra has to be able to, the skilled labor, then they have to have that skill. And they have to be industrious, they have to be there to work, they have to be active. I think there may be other places where it goes more into it, but the Vaishyas, they had to be resourceful and expert in those, be able to make decisions there, take the necessary risks involved in doing their particular branch of Vaishyism. So maybe those are more understood, that people can understand those, but the you might just say, oh, well, Kshatriya, all he has to do is rule, but there's a little more to it. But for a Vaishya, the Bhagavad Gita doesn't go into it that much. Don't even know another place where it goes into it more. I think 11th canto.
Krishna's description in some more detail, I think,
the lab, he's saying in the Vishnu Mahabharata.
You just hear ask again and again what it is to the right.
So that's where Sudra is pretty all-encompassing. You don't need a lot of good qualities, but to be a good Sudra, you need certain good, you know, like working hard and being loyal. And you're supposed to be protected then, honest.
They asked Prabhupada, he was talking, he said before, he was out about the International College for the Sudra program. Yes, well, what will we train them? The obedience. We must learn to be obedient.
If they're obedient, then they won't be doing sinful activities. Then they can progress. The problem is that the people are protected. You exploit the laborers, then you get a strike. Well, now you get strikes anyway, it's called a greed, but to some extent. But there was that system that the workers were totally cared for in the Vedic society. They were given everything that they required. Prabhupada said they only have to work about 3-4 months a year. That's the time they had off. We're trying to get down to some countries are trying to get to a 5-day week. Like in India, it's still 6-day working week. And they're following the British system. Hare Krishna.